Welcome back, everybody. This is Oscar Talk with Chris Tapley of InContention.com and Ann Thompson of Thompson on Hollywood. The AFI Fest wrapped up last night with the Los Angeles premiere of Black Swan. We were both there. And man, did it play really well for me a second time.
It played well. It played well for us and the whole house. I was sitting between Sophia Savage and Sasha Stone.
Yeah, Steve was back there.
And they were both like so caught up in it, so intense, so like they were like holding their breath. They could hardly breathe.
Yeah, that's the vibe I got.
Yeah, I was doing more of the kind of dodge and parry, you know, kind of ducking under my notebook and stuff, because it's intense. It's like a horror film.
You know, I'll admit, I actually did bring my hand up to my face once or twice and kind of look through my fingers.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I knew what was coming.
And that was why I was doing that, too.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I was shrinking away from, you know, there's an early image that is actually one of the most disturbing, and it remains so. And I'm not giving anything away just because it's so early in the movie, where, you know, there's a lot of work with mirrors. And
right.
And today I'm going to talk, I'm planning to go over the visual effects in the movie with the guy who did it. And there's a lot of that in the movie that you wouldn't really be aware of, where they're altering. One of the creepiest things is she looks in the mirror and there's a doppelganger. She thinks she sees herself on the subway, and it's a lot like Repulsion or something, where you're kind of, you know, you're not sure what's real and what she's fantasizing or hallucinating, including at one point someone she has sex with, and she doesn't even, you know, we like the idea of what she's doing, but we don't know if it's true or not, you know.
Right.
But the early image is one that I just was freaked out again last night, where she's pulling at her skin on her finger.
Yeah. And that is the one that is like, wow. Well, you mentioned the mirror thing, and this movie I really want to talk about again once it releases, because there's so much that I want to get into the nuts and bolts of it that I really don't think the listeners would want to hear yet. But for spoilage, because there's a lot of just great moments that I think you should just experience. But is the mirror thing you're talking about, something I noticed very early in the movie is when she's not actually looking in the mirror. She just kind of turns, but you definitely see that the image in the mirror
isn't
behind.
Right.
Yeah.
It isn't quite right.
And I noticed that the first time I saw it.
It really creeps you out.
Yeah,
as you and you know something. And the music was effective. There was a lot of that kind of, kind of, you know, ooh, you know.
Yeah.
It's like something's wrong. and she's walking down, you know, dark corridors. It's an old-fashioned thriller, really.
Yeah.
That was why. I mean, you know, I keep coming back to this, and there were people at the party last night where I'm now 100% convinced that Natalie Portman will be duking it out with Annette Bening for the Best Actress Oscar. And that's because of the degree of difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
If you really take into effect, you know, the Academy actors take into account the question of, you know, is it a hard dive, you know?
Right.
And in this case, you can't get much harder than someone who is not 100% trained ballet dancer,
right.
You know, getting up to speed to go on point and do a lot of the stunts really that she had to do here.
And you know what helps that? You know, you've always said that because she does her own dancing, that's a big deal. But also the film it digs into how difficult dancing is. You know, part of the narrative is just that discipline.
Absolutely,
and,
right.
And so that will, I think, help that to click.
Also, people in the Academy are artists, and they're going to relate to the kind of obsessive, perfectionist drive, you know, to be perfect that she has.
You know, precisely.
And to perform, to do well, to excel.
Precisely. I just wrote about this, but the film is about the process. It's about the creative process, in a sense. And if the Academy can understand the gore and the sex as metaphor, which it is, they'll understand that it's a movie about them.
I agree. I think they will. But, you know, best picture. I'm sure the Black Swan will be in the top 10. I'm sure it will get lots of nominations.
You're sure it'll be a best picture nomination? Is that what
I think
saying?
So.
I'm starting to come around on that, actually.
Yeah. Well, partly because we're at a different stage now.
Right.
where, and this segues into our next subject, the fighter.
Well, before we get into that, actually, if you don't mind, regarding Black Swan, I was talking to Steve Pond afterwards, and he's been pretty convinced for a while that it would probably get in, and he makes a valid point regarding the preferential ballot. If you like this movie, you love it, and it's at the top of your list. If you don't, it's at the bottom of your list. So,
well, part of the problem, yes, I think that's possible, but part of the problem with this is that the Academy is made up of many different people who have different taste, and you could imagine certain crafts appreciating this in certain ways, but it is not, and this is what I've been saying all along, it is not a, I mean, I think the actors will go for it, because not only is Natalie good, but so is Vincent Cassel. Now, I was looking at his performance also and trying to say, is it big enough? Is there enough going on there? I think there is. I was debating this with someone last night. You know, it's not, he doesn't have, you know, some huge, you know, mental breakdown in the movie, but he's very, very convincing and very good. Even if he was wearing a false dance butt, which Aronofsky revealed last night. But you know, Barbara Hershey is very creepy. I don't think she's going to get a supporting actress nomination, but mm-hmm. she is very disturbing and good. In her own way,
and Mila Kunis is on fire.
Is very good, very good. But the issue is does the old fashioned side of the Academy, the mainstream side, the side that's squeamish with movies like this and tends to be a little bit highbrow and judgmental about genre material. You know, will they appreciate the handheld camera work? Will they appreciate what Matthew Libatic, you know, does here, which is really very good? But this is not a polished, you know, Chicago style kind of, you know, big scale movie. This is a low budget movie.
Yeah, and the Super 16, you know, clearly he's still in love with this verite style. Part of me really wanted to see these compositions in a more polished kind of look rather than the grainy gritty kind of thing he was going for, but I appreciate what he was going for because it does create an atmosphere that is inescapable.
Well, he has an approach which is a very close point of view. He gets inside the character that he's following, and mm-hmm. this is how he does it, by getting up close to them. And dancing has not been shot this way, you know, previously, and so he's, you know, Fox Searchlight recognized that he was stepping outside the box and wondered about it, but I give him credit. You know, he's not thinking about whether this pleases the Oscar voters or not, and he shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's an audacious piece of work. This and 127 Hours. It's great that Searchlight is behind both of these films, I think. But you were about to talk about The Fighter, so let's go to that. We saw that this week.
The point I was making there is that we're seeing one of the reasons we can sort of more confidently place Black Swan in the top 10 is even if it has, you know, some issues with widespread appeal, is that, you know, we're starting to see the rest of the movies. So The Fighter, again, much stronger on the acting side, mm-hmm. I would say. So they showed it at the AFI Fest at this quote-unquote surprise, you know, screening mm-hmm. that they sent out a press announcement of the day of, which is why we were there. And I found it to be a very compelling movie. It really pulls you in. It's a very it's a great story, really, is why it works. The buzz I had heard about Christian Bale was accurate. You know, the guy steals it. Yeah.
I think he's going to win. I really do. Because I look at that category and...
Jeffrey Rush is pretty good.
Jeffrey Rush is pretty good, but pretty good is not Christian Bale in The Fighter, you know. And Rush has his Oscar. I think it's there's a narrative to be built around Bale's.
He's never been nominated.
Cause, yeah.
And he's been very good at many things. He seems to like to get incredibly skinny before he can act his ass off.
Yeah, exactly. I've got to find out what his secret is.
Yeah, there's the normal Bale, and then there's skinny Bale, American Psycho Bale.
Yeah, Yeah, for the machinist,
mechanic, that's usually like yeah, machinist Bell, exactly.
He used to he would eat an apple and drink a like he would drink a cup of coffee in the morning and then eat an apple at night, and that was what he would do every day for the machinist. That's how he got down to that like skeleton. That's not something I'm gonna do to try to lose some weight, but in any
not
case,
recommended.
Not recommended. But I really liked the fighter actually. I went the next day to the Q&A they had on the lot, and they had Wahlberg, Bale, Amy Adams, and the great Jack McGee there. God, I love that guy. Character actor, used to be a New York fireman, plays
the dad,
Mickey Ward's father. Yeah,
he's great.
I thought it had a really interesting energy. Amy Adams, you've never seen her like this before.
I liked her tremendously, and I liked her even more than Melissa Leo. The one part of the movie that's a little takes some getting used to is that Russell is not one he's no slacker. So he's right. He's going to make sure that there's comedy, you know, that there's entertainment value, and he's not going to sit back for a second. So there's all these sequences with Melissa Leo as the sort of this movie does verge on misogyny, seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, the mom is just such a nasty, overwhelming piece of work, and this brood of daughters that she has with her at all times.
Brood is a great word to use.
And they're just awful. And it's really fun to watch Amy Adams as the girlfriend sort of standing up to them and fighting with them,
right.
Literally. But it becomes almost too much.
Yeah,
over the top.
It gets close to camp here and there, I think, with those you know, someone mentioned that it was borderline The Family and Million Dollar Baby, which I don't think is that bad, but
it's close to Million Dollar Baby in some ways.
It gets close.
But it doesn't have that naturalistic tone. That's the thing. Even from the start, the fighter is enhanced. It's on steroids.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
got energy to burn. And you know, he obviously is encouraging just about everybody but Mark Wahlberg to be over scale. And
yeah.
Then Mark Wahlberg is very sweet and a very sort of recessive.
Yeah.
Way.
And when you at the Q&A, Bale mentioned regarding Dickie Eklund, the character he plays, he actually dialed it down, and they all said that The Family is even more colorful than what you're seeing depicted. So to consider that, it's like, well, all right, but narratively it just feels those elements start to dip into camp, but it's fine. I just really like the movie, and I do look
it draws
forward to seeing
you
it again.
Yeah, you get very, very caught up in the dynamics of the family, which is what it's really about.
Yeah, it's not a boxing movie.
It's not a boxing movie. And the boxing is fine. You know, various people were sort of complaining that it didn't have the structure and payoff of you know, there's some kind of, you know, they expected some kind of, you know, almost an intellectual structure in the fighting, you know, that it had to pay off, you know, in some way. And I actually thought the last fight was fine. It worked for me. I wasn't looking for anything more mechanical about it.
That's great. I love the way I love that they decided to shoot it as if it was the HBO telecast. You know?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And the editing in the movie actually is really good. I thought it's Pamela Martin, who's worked with David in the past. And,
no, I liked the movie. Came across to me as fresh and not expected. You know, it really draws you in. It draws you in a very compelling way. It is you're very caught up in the characters.
Mm-hmm.
You're not sitting back watching at all,
mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing. That's a sign of a good movie.
True. Well, let's backtrack a bit. You were at the Britannia Awards earlier.
Before
this
we
week.
Backtrack. Okay. I want to address something that I brought up in this podcast in the past about David Russell.
Okay.
And as I've said then, and I'll say now, nothing personal at all. But I will say that it would be unlikely that he would be nominated for Best Director. That
mm-hmm.
I will stick to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever issues he has remain. But people are going to respond to the acting, to the film,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the different things that he does well here,
mm-hmm.
you know, on their merits.
Mm-hmm.
But that a director nom I would find hard to believe.
And if I could speak on that, it's, I like, you know, some people have said that it's, I read once or twice someone say something that it's not, it's a more traditionalist kind of film, so therefore he's not, it's not Russell doing his thing. I actually thought that you could see his personality in this film quite a bit.
Totally. He's doing his thing. Yeah. I wouldn't say, I would say what he's doing is more mainstream by virtue of what I just said, that it's a compelling family drama that with action that pulls you into the characters.
Right.
Very effectively. So, it's just not as, it's not the edgier material that he's been involved with in the past.
Right. Well, it was a passion project and I'm glad they all, got it done.
Well, the other point to make here is that this is another movie along with The Way Back, which almost didn't get made, along with Black Swan, which almost didn't get made. I mean, really on the edge of not getting made, where these people all had to will themselves. The actors had to work for less. Everybody had to roll up their sleeves. The financing came from all over the world. This is, you know, Paramount may want to claim The Fighter as theirs, but in fact, they're just distributing it almost on a service deal.
Yeah.
And Relativity had to pay for that movie. So, you know, we're not looking at, I mean, The Town was paid for by Warner Brothers. If it gets, you know, there are very few movies, you know, this happens year after year. And I just want to say to the studios, you should be ashamed. You really should.
I agree.
That all the filmmakers have to now the truth of the matter is, you know, that in the old days, you know, they would put up the scratch for one or two movies a year, and you know, Fox can say we have Fox Searchlight and so forth, and that's true. Sony has Sony Classics and they're still focused, but the truth of the matter is the big studios have just abdicated.
Yeah. It feels like a just helpless atmosphere, and it's kind of like what Duvall said the other day. Actually, they'd rather spend $100 million on a movie with Brad Pitt that's going to fail anyway, than spend $10 million on something.
It's true, and I really wish they would. The truth of the matter is that the industry has shifted and changed.
Absolutely.
And the reality is that very few, I mean, we ran a piece yesterday. It was a beautiful Q&A where Guillermo del Toro just went off on how, you know, we're not far away from a lot of these movies not getting made, getting made at all. Like Beautiful is another one.
Totally.
And that's going to be our loss. And so, I mean, yes, there will be these passion projects where everybody scrapes it together. But I'm sure you know, and I know, perfectly gifted, smart, talented, experienced people who are giving up on making movies because they can't make a living. And that should not be.
Well, it goes, we're getting into this now, but I have this conversation a lot. It's, at the very top of these organizations, it's just not film people anymore. I mean, you can take this back to the Telecommunications Act of 96 when everything just became corporatized and everything is owned by like six companies nowadays. And at the top, you've got, you know, pencil pushers. You don't have film people. You don't have artists at the top these days.
There are still people who love film who are involved in these industries, but they're afraid. The risks are too great and
they're answering to certain people.
If you're afraid and if you're running on fear, you don't take chances. And you have to have gutsy people who are willing to put their careers on the line and back something no matter what. And those people are hard to find. Now, you know, Harvey Weinstein, you can say what you want about him, but he's one of those people who puts his guts on the line. And so, believe it or not, does Ryan Kavanaugh. You know, he may, I don't know what drives him, what his ambitions are, but he is helping to get movies made and some interesting ones. So we'll see. It'll be the Summits. It'll be the Summits and the Weinsteins and the Graham Kings of the world that are going to have to save the movie business.
Yeah, well, my best to them. let's talk about Britannia Awards. You were there.
A week ago, And it's one of my favorite events of the year, especially when Stephen Fry is hosting. And it's just, you know, I'm an old Anglophile, and every, you know, it's a fun night where, you know, they get a couple of studios to back a couple of their prizes. So, you know, it's an Academy promo play for some place like Paramount, which had Jeff Bridges accepting an award because, you know, True Grit is coming up, and you get Christopher Nolan accepting an award because Inception is certainly in play, and then Disney was in there with Tron Legacy, which was connected to Jeff Bridges also, and Olivia Wilde, did a promo, and Marion, you know, Cotillard went up and presented, and it was, you know, the high point of the evening was not related to too much promotion, although Michael Sheen is in Tron Legacy. He co-starred with Fry in the movie Wild. So oh, yeah. he was making all these comments about how he did his first screen kiss with Fry, you know, and he was always you know, engorged whenever he saw him. Everybody was having a great time.
You gotta
time
tell the
it.
Joke, man. You gotta tell his joke was great. What was it? Was like a what was it? Something quiver. A sphincter quiver or something?
His sphincter would quiver at the thought of
just cracks me up.
Fry coming at him from the rear. Yes, that's right. It was great. So that's and I was sitting with Vinnie Jones.
Rectal quiver. That was it.
The soccer player who's working on a TV show called The Cape. And he was buying Veuve Clicquot for the table. And so we were all having a fine time.
Nice. Well, sounds good. Well, there's going to be another award ceremony this weekend, the Governor's Awards.
Yes, I do look. This is the second installment of it. They started it last year. It's a bunch of Oscars that they're not going to show on Oscar night, including the Thalberg award. And we're going to there's been a lot of controversy around the honorary Oscar going to Godard, he's not coming, and there's been all kinds of talk about his various films that he made and statements that he made that involve anti-Semitism, and various people defending him, and so on. So we'll see who shows up. I looked up all of his. I mean, I'm a big Godard fan for the period of time when he was at his best. You know, basically starting with Breathless and ending almost 10 years later with Le Gay Savoir, and those are some of the greatest films ever. And he deserves an award just for those films. But he made a lot of movies over a course of his lifetime.
Right.
And with a lot of people. So they're the names that could be brought forth for this. I'm just going to be very curious to see, you know, who shows up. And I think the Eli Wallach Award will be very, you know, there'll be some emotion in the room for him.
Right.
Do you think he has a chance? And what do you think the chances are for the Ghost Rider?
Do I think who has a chance?
Eli Wallach as a supporting actor nominee for the Ghost Rider.
You know, that movie just, you know, I watched it recently. I just don't like the movie. It's kind of forgettable to me. It's really, it didn't ring my bell.
I loved it.
I frankly forgot he was in it.
He was great.
I remember
in
him
it,
from
actually.
Wall Street more than I do from The Ghost Rider. But yeah, probably. I mean, just my instinct is no, but what do I know? Godard, yeah, I bought Breathless on Criterion Blu-ray at Barnes & Noble the other day. 50% off all Criterion titles. You got to go check it out.
I have so many screeners and so many TV shows like Boardwalk Empire and stuff like that that I'm behind on that I rarely buy. Most of my DVD collection is gifts or gift bags. That's the way it is.
Perk of the business. I gave up on Boardwalk Empire. I'm gonna check it all out when it comes out on DVD, I think. But I just couldn't focus
on it week after week.
I
absolutely love it. And Kevin Brownlow is going to be awarded, and I just love him. And Francis Coppola is going to be awarded. So it should. Last year, you know, Tarantino gave a great speech honoring Roger Corman, and it was a good night. You know, Kirk Douglas honored Lauren Bacall, and it just feels like, you know, everybody in the industry is in one place at one time, and, mm-hmm. and you can really sort of walk around and see the play. I can accost them in person and tell them all how they should be making better movies. They'll love that.
Well, we'll look forward to your report on that next week. I won't be there, but have a good time.
Thanks, Chris.
And let's answer one or two questions here. My mouse is acting up. There we go. I haven't gone through them yet. Oh, this is good. And, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow was on the CMAs the other day singing Country Strong. This person asked, which songs do you think will make the cut this year? Country Strong has an original called Me in Tennessee that her husband, the lead singer of Coldplay, wrote. You know, I just talked to Alan Menken yesterday. I wrote about this. They're only submitting one song from Tangled as a calculated move.
Then they won't split.
Yeah, exactly. So it's I See the Light will be nominated, I think, definitely.
Well, it's usually an animated film that has a couple of the nominations, right. at least. Well, I mean, I just get annoyed when they're, like, promoting Janet Jackson songs from Tyler Perry sequels. It just annoys me, you know?
Yeah, well, they're doing their job, I guess. Toy Story 3, Randy Newman will probably get nominated. Waiting for Superman, John Legend, great song.
That will get nominated, yep.
I think the Dido song from 127 Hours is unique, and it plays during a key moment in the movie, which is key. But that could be nominated, I feel
like. Is there a Springsteen song this year?
If only.
Yeah.
I just saw The Promise on HBO. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, God. The Making of Darkness on the Edge of Town. It's amazing. Watch that. Other songs, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these two musicals, Country Strong and Burlesque from Screen Gems, both of them, how their songs work out. Cher's got a big power ballad from Diane Warren.
That's the kind of thing they respond to.
Yeah. Particularly if it's used within the context of the film, and obviously Cher singing at a key moment in the middle of a musical, and the song's all about her, you know. It's called You Haven't Seen the Last of Me, so you can just imagine. So I guess those are my picks. What about you? Do you know of anything else that...
I have to get into this. Yeah. You just have to look at the whole list and sort of go down, and they tend to go with what you said is true, but they also tend to lean toward big pop stars singing songs in movies. So not just at the end, but in the context of the movie. So we'll see. I have to look at it.
Did you see For Color Girls?
I may skip that.
Yeah, they didn't seem interested in inviting me, so I won't answer any of the questions about that.
I'm you know, fine with me. Yeah. I haven't had anyone tell me that I need to see it, so I'll let that one go.
Let's see. A lot of people asking about The Fighter, which we've already handled. Okay, this person says, what exactly is going on with The Way Back at this point? Does it still have a chance to be bought by a larger studio? No, it's going to be distributed by New Market.
New Market being a subsidiary of the company that paid for the film. Obviously, this is not what they had in mind.
Yeah.
This is not what they were looking for. They were trying to sell it to a studio. This is a big-scale, $30 million epic movie.
You just wrote about this.
Peter Weir.
You just wrote about this, too. Let's talk briefly about that. I mean, do you think they're... I feel like there's this kind of atmosphere among certain writers that they think that the film isn't being handled correctly. I don't think that's fair because everything is cost effective.
Well, correctly. I mean, ideally, this is the same conversation we were having earlier. I mean, someone would have stepped up.
Right.
But at this stage, at this time, they look at a movie like this and they see a sinkhole of cost attached to a big Oscar campaign that will not necessarily pay off. They don't want to invest in another Diving Bell and Butterfly, basically, mm-hmm. you know? And so, you know, there's a list of a lot of movies that do really well at the Oscars and mm-hmm. win Oscars, right. lose money because the Oscar campaign is too expensive. And this is the serious issue that surrounds a lot of these films right now. So, you know, you have a lot of wannabes and people at a lower end budget who are driving their own cars and no entourages and you know, everybody's sort of cutting costs and trying to get the work done. Now, the people who are working on this are on the way back are working very hard to get the interviews and get the exposure and get people to see the movie. And if they can get enough people to see the movie, it could come through. Mm-hmm. That's what has to happen. It's, the bottom line is about getting the Academy voters to see the movie. Mm-hmm. And little engines that could are you know, can get in there. It just takes a lot of sweat equity and work.
And The Way Back is just not a movie that needs to be seen on a screener, which I think is how it's going to be seen by and large.
I agree with that too. Yeah, that's so, too bad. And yeah. All right, so there was all this fuss about how they screened it mistakenly. I think somebody should be, you know, wrapped over the knuckles on this because they screened it at the Shoebox Theater at Raleigh, you know, for a bunch of us.
Right.
And they were trying to accommodate somebody who wanted to see it on that side of town, and there's limited screening rooms available, and the big screening rooms cost a lot of money, and that's part of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to go see your movie at the Academy, it's going to cost you, not that it's available at this point.
Right.
So, you know, it's a question of difference between, you know, less than $100 and several hundred dollars for each screening.
Right.
So, but that movie deserves to be seen on the big screen. So, it's in their interest to make sure that that happens.
They should put it all into one big event. Get a screening. I mean, I don't know how these things work, but I just get a screening and a big reception and have Peter there and just get everybody to go. But, you know, whatever. I don't make the decisions. Last thing, people have asked about this every now and then. Have you heard anything on the Jim Brooks? You know, it's not finished. I know that much, but
what I've been told about that, and sometimes it's a question of managing expectations. Like I was looking at Morning Glory and Love and Other Drugs, and saying I just didn't think that they were really Oscar movies. Although, what do you think? I mean, Harrison Ford, is that a remote possibility?
No. Golden Globe, maybe. I really didn't like the movie, so I'm probably being a bit biased when I say that, but, you know, I don't think so.
All right. Well, it got much worse reviews than I would have expected, actually. I enjoyed the movie quite a bit as a commercial entertainment, somewhat mm-hmm. more than I liked Love and Other Drugs, I have mm-hmm. to say, Morning Glory. And then the other question is whether the James Brooks movie is going to be in there. And so sometimes people are telling you things to manage your expectations, right?
Sure.
So if the focus people are assuring you that somewhere is not an Oscar contender, you know, they're trying to lower your expectations of what somewhere is. And a lot of people are now, like Jeff Wells finally saw Somewhere and, oh, I really like it. mm-hmm. So I think that's what's going on with the Jim Brooks too. You know, it's just a commercial movie. It's just, we're just looking to take it. That's what a lot of people are saying now. And that's like a tactic. It's
right.
A strategy.
Of course.
But that's what I've heard. I've heard that it's just a commercial movie. That's the terrible thing about this time of year. You look at everything and, you know, I wish I could look at Black Swan on its own merits without thinking about the Oscars, but that's just the way it is right now.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, I guess we'll go ahead and wrap things up there. Good talk. Have fun at the awards tomorrow night, the Governor's Awards.
I look forward.
And talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Now there was a time